Let's talk about how you're going to set your classroom up for success starting from the very first week of math class. Hello, and welcome to Making Number Sense Make Sense, a podcast for elementary teachers, specifically early elementary teachers, looking to really make an impact in the number sense of their students. The first week of school is just all the new things, new students, new routines, a new community, and it's the beginning of your journey for the next 180 days. So setting up expectations and routines helps your students know exactly what to expect, which is crucial to a successful school year. So the reality is, when students walk into your classroom, you never really know what you're going to get. You're never going to know what the vibe is. You're never going to know right away what's going to work with them. So setting up a baseline of expectations is so important, and it allows your students, and if most of your students understand the routines, understand the expectations, and are able to follow it, it allows you to have a little bit more time if there are students who need a little extra attention or support, so that all of your students will be able to access all of the things that you're doing throughout the year. First, I'm going to talk about kind of the components of starting the first week of school, and then I'm going to give kind of an overview, a little sample of what the first week of school could look like for you. A great way to start any math lesson is with a number talk or a number sense routine, and the one I like to start with personally is which one doesn't belong, because there are no wrong answers, and it gets kids talking. Oftentimes, students can feel really shy at the beginning of the year, they might not want to share, but if they're just talking about pictures that they're seeing, it's an opportunity to invite them into conversation without having to feel the pressure of being correct or incorrect. So in which one doesn't belong, you might show four images and students simply share their opinion on which one does or does not belong. And this is a great opportunity for students to start to seriously think about what they're seeing and reflect on it and have conversations with each other. So they might agree or disagree, and you can take that opportunity to talk about how you could agree or disagree with somebody. Respectfully reinforce that we should be listening to other students when they're talking, because they can also have a turn to share and they would want the same thing. This type of groundwork is setting the stage for academic conversations that your students will have throughout the year. This is also a great opportunity to share with them a silent signal that they could do if they agree with what another student is saying. Oftentimes, a lot of kids might have the same opinions about which one does or doesn't belong, but a chorus of Me Toos kind of can derail a conversation and you want to rein it in. So you might show them, if you agree with a so-and-so, student A or student B, you can show them by using a connection sign. My partner teacher would use the ASL sign for Me Too, and she taught them that on her side of the day when she was teaching on the English side and I was teaching on the Spanish side. So to keep it consistent, I just did the same thing. The kids understood it and it worked really well. So that's something you might want to try to avoid the chorus of Me Toos in a which one doesn't belong situation. After a number sense routine would be, if we're into curriculum, where I would go into a mini lesson or a lesson. But to start off the school year, it's really great to introduce students to the materials that they're going to be using right away, how to use them, and how to care for them appropriately. So one way to do this is to do a guided discovery. A guided discovery is part of the responsive classroom framework, wherein you are trying to build a community of learners, and this is just one piece of that entire framework. I'm going to use pattern blocks for this example. So in a guided discovery, I would put these pattern blocks into a container and cover it up so students could not see what it was. So I might shake the container a little bit. I might ask students to ask me questions like, oh, is it heavy? Is it big? Like, what might it be? And the point of doing this is to create some curiosity in what you're doing, and then it kind of sets you up for a big reveal. So after you've taken some guesses of what students think it might be, you reveal the pattern blocks. And at that point, you might ask students if they've ever used them before. Some of them might have used them in preschool or a different classroom, and you can ask if they know what they're called. If they do, then they can share it. And if they don't know what it's called, then you name it. You might say, these are pattern blocks, and this is a manipulative, or these are materials that we're going to use throughout the year. If they have used a material before, you could ask students to share what they've used them for in the past. And if they haven't, you could ask them to think about how they could use them right now. And so someone might say you can build something with them. Someone might say you could build a house, or you could build a hamburger. And as they're suggesting things to you, you can actually try and build the little house or build the hamburger or whatever it is that they say. You can try and build those things so they can see how to use it. After that, you'd let the students know that they're also going to have an opportunity to use these things. And this is when you would mention how you want these things used. So you might say something like, the only place that the pattern block should be is in your hand or on the table, or if you're in a circle on the carpet, the only place the pattern block should be is your hands or on the floor. So that would avoid students trying to put them in their mouth or put them on their body or something else that they shouldn't be doing with the pattern blocks. Try to come at it from a positive, like, these are the places you can have the pattern blocks versus you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, just to keep the spin more positive. You then give students a small handful of pattern blocks and let them build with it, see what they do. And as they're working, you would circulate around the room and ask them questions about what they're doing or how they've used them in the past or what they want to try and do. This is like since it is a guided discovery, it's kind of a free exploration time. And if students are using these things inappropriately, you could give like a soft correction to that student individually, not making a big deal out of it, just kind of a reminder, because this is the first time that they're using that material in your classroom. There are different ways to get your students' attention at a time like this. So you might be using a timer in your classroom. You might have a chime in your classroom, whatever it is. You could give them a little warning when it's coming, like, I'm going to ring the bell or the timer's going to go off soon. When that happens, stop what you're doing. So stop building. But you might want to remind them not to clean anything up, because you're going to want to give students the opportunity to see what their peers might have created and model the way that you want things cleaned up. After the timer has gone off or you've rung the bell, you would talk to your students about taking a gallery walk. And a gallery walk is when everybody stands up and walks around the circle or walks around the classroom wherever students were working to take a look at what some other students built. Now, it's very important to remind them not to touch anybody else's work, that they're just looking. And after you've had your gallery walk, you could bring everybody back to the carpet or wherever you're working and have them share what they saw someone else did that they thought was really cool, or something that they wouldn't have thought of, or something they want to try and do in the future. Afterwards, have them watch you and tell you what they notice while you're putting things away. So they might notice that you're putting things away gently, that you're not throwing the materials, things like that. And after you kind of established the way that you want things put away, they can do the same and reflect on what they did, how they liked it, and what they might want to do in the future. And this framework of a guided discovery works for any material that you're introducing to your classroom. And in the first week of school, there's a lot of new materials that students might be using. Once you have a few materials introduced, it's a good time to think about starting your math workshop time. Now, in the first week of math workshop time, or center time, station time, however you want to refer to it, we're not really doing that much math. The first week of school, it's more about the routine of math workshop. So that would be starting in one place, cleaning up your things, being respectful when you're there, and moving to the next place when the timer goes off. So there's really just, I'm going to work on whatever it is that's at this table, and then when I'm done, I'm going to clean it up and move safely to the next place. So you're really just getting that routine in place, not necessarily a lot of math the first week of school. During this time, you'll really think about what you want your math workshop to look like halfway through the year, at the end of the year, and set up those kinds of routines right at the beginning of the year. So things like, do you want students to clean up right when they hear the bell? Do you want them to move when they're done? Or do you want everybody at the table to be done before they go to the next spot? Do you want them to ask you for permission to go to the bathroom during station time, or do you want them to have a little bit more freedom and just be able to go to the bathroom when they need to go during that time? Things like that are what you'd want to consider before you do math workshop, and then show the kids or tell the kids, this is the way that we're going to do things, so they can start to get in that practice. Beyond how they move from place to place, they need to know where they're going when the timer goes off. You can use a pocket chart to show students, like, if you're in this group, you're going to go to this place, and then this place, and then this place. Or you can also use a digital chart that's basically just pictures on a slide, and then teach students how to read it. So you might say, this is your group. Where are you going first? Where are you going second? So you could really talk about the chart and how it works. And so that lets them know, okay, I'm going to do these three things today. I'm going here, here, and here, or however many stations that you have, to cut down on any confusion. And it also empowers the students to be able to support other students if they're still learning how to read the station chart, whichever chart you choose to use. A note before we continue with stations. Sometimes, some classes, the transition of moving from one place to another just does not work for them. And in that case, you might want to consider moving the material instead of having the students move from place to place. Depending on your stations, it might have to be located in a certain spot. For example, if they're doing a floor puzzle, it kind of has to be on the floor because that's the only place that it would fit. So maybe they would only move for that kind of activity, and for the rest of them, what would move is the material instead of them. The benefit of having them move is they can be more independent, and if you're working with small groups, you won't have to change everything before they go to the next spot. But if it's an issue for your students, you might want to consider the other way, moving the materials for them instead of having them move. During their first station time, they have the material that's at their table if they're working in groups. They use it, and whatever you're using, a timer, chime, whatever, it'd be the same to signal the end of station. So you would talk to your students about when they hear the bell or when they hear the chime, it's time to clean up their materials. Cleanup is where it can become a little bit chaotic because sometimes students want to go really fast and they start throwing things into their bins. So this is when you'd want to reinforce the way that we clean up, the way that we have talked about cleaning up things when we're done with them in guided discovery, and try and bring that back into math workshop so it's consistent with what they have done in the past and cuts out some chaos wherever possible. You could choose to have kids move on their own or wait for your signal to move. Either way has pros and cons. If they move on their own, they're more independent, but also they might move on before another team is done cleaning up or another group is done cleaning up, and that can lead to things not getting put away the right way, or if a student wasn't quite finished with something, it can lead to some friction between students. So that's something to consider, or you might have them wait until everybody's done cleaning up and then they can move safely. But before they move from space to space, reinforce the way that they move around a classroom. So a lot of students want to run to the next spot, but in a small classroom, if everyone is running at the same time, you know that's a recipe for disaster. So reinforce that we are walking in the classroom, going to the next spot. Before they move on, you can cue them to look at this chart, get used to reading the station chart, so they know where they're headed to next. The next part of the first week of school is setting your classroom up for problem solving and collaborative learning to be something that is expected rather than something they do every once in a while. I'll be the first to admit that teaching problem solving was something that was a challenge for me when I first started because there's so many problem types and it's a lot of listening. And often students aren't really able to talk through what's going on and make sense of a problem before solving it. So I found that doing a building thinking classrooms model of problem solving and setting that up right from the beginning of the year was the most success that I'd had in teaching problem solving because they were doing it daily and they were used to talking through problems and thinking through problems so that when they had to do problems on their own, they already knew kind of how to approach problems and weren't held back or caught up with not even knowing how to approach a problem. I will list some episodes in the show notes of going in depth on what you need to start a building thinking classroom model and what it is and what it could look like in early elementary. But for now, overview is that students are working together in pairs, problem solving on a vertical non-permanent surface, so a whiteboard, with one marker between the two of them. The benefit to working in pairs is they always have someone to bounce ideas off of, and with their marker sharing the marker, they do have to talk to each other to solve the problem. And since it's on a non-permanent surface, they don't feel as tied down. Like if they were using a pencil and paper, they might be more hesitant to start because it feels more permanent than a whiteboard that's easy to just wipe away. In this episode, I'm going to talk more about the routine, again, kind of like the math workshop routine of moving around and getting to the right space versus what they're really doing once they're there. The big goal, I would say, for the first week of school is for students to understand that their partner might not be their very best friend, but that as peers, as a learning community, they should be trying to engage with whoever their partner is and getting to the right place and sharing their marker. However you choose to set up your classroom or your whiteboards, maybe it's color-coded, maybe it's number-coded, whatever it is, you're going to show students how to figure out where they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to do when they get there. I used color-coded cards, and I'll have a link to those down below that you can grab for free. I would have two blue things, like a blue J and a blueberry. And so if they picked a random card and they were both blue, they would go to the area that was marked as the blue area with their marker, and then they could start to get to work. For the first week of school, after they've gotten to the right space, I would be looking to see if the students are sharing the marker and talking to each other, and really encourage students to do that in this problem-solving setting. And similar to the guided discovery gallery walk, they would do the same thing with their whiteboard. So whenever the timer went off, the first thing they want to do is just erase what they have, but really remind them not to do that so that people can look around and see what's going on. A word of caution here with the gallery walk is talk about how you want them to move. The first time I did a gallery walk with the whiteboards, I was not specific enough. And when I said, take a look around to see what happens, they like scattered like candy out of a pinata. They didn't stay with their partner. They were just kind of bouncing all over the room. That's not what you want. So talk to them about maybe rotating from with their partner from space to space, or if there's something they want to see across the room, if that's something you want to allow them to just go to one spot or to see everyone's work, and to travel together from spot to spot so they can talk to their partner about what they're seeing before you do a consolidation or before you gather together to highlight things that you saw other students do or reinforce things that you saw that were appropriate behaviors or interesting ideas, etc. So those are the main things I like to focus on the first week of school in terms of math. So you're doing number talks, guided discoveries, practice rotating and doing math stations or math centers, and practice problem solving with a partner to set your school year up for success. So an example of the first week might be on Monday, you do a number talk and a guided discovery. On Tuesday, you do a number talk and a problem solving session with the whiteboards. On Wednesday, you do a number talk, guided discovery, and a problem solving session, if you have time for it. Thursday, number talk, guided discovery, problem solving session, and by Thursday or Friday, depending on how many guided discoveries you do, you'll probably have introduced enough materials so that you can start rotating from place to place during station time or during center time. Looking to week two, you'd want to continue practicing rotating from station to station during your center time. Introduce new manipulatives if you need them. Give them non-curricular problem-solving tasks to get them used to that routine as well. And maybe a few tasks aligned to the curriculum sprinkled in if you feel like your kids are getting the hang of it and are ready for that. Doing workshop and problem-solving back-to-back may be a lot. So you can alternate days or break it up with other activities. So you might have your defined math time be your number talk, mini lesson, and station time, and then at a different time, do your problem solving, whatever works with your schedule. This is not the be-all, end-all. Feel free to make these ideas your own and have in a way that works for your classroom. Feel free to send me a message on Instagram or send me an email if you have any questions. I'm always happy to talk about things with you. And if you found value in today's episode, consider leaving a review and share with another teacher who might find it helpful.